Judge G. Thomas, I sell, E I S E L E, Little Rock, June 12th, 1974.
Well, I think the one other thing.
He was a war hero and came back, and along with the many other GIs who got involved in politics, came on very strong. Ran for prosecuting attorney in Hot Springs and defeated a great machine politician, Leo McLaughlin, who'd been mayor over there for years, and he had a terrible reputation as a machine candidate. If I recall what Sid did, he I was at school at the time, but he got into the primary and got beat in the primary and met contesting the election practices and so forth, then ran as an independent and won in the general election. And the consequence was vaulted right into state, the state politics. And became governor before he completed his term as prosecuting attorney. Maybe he finished one, I'm not sure. Well, what do you have, what questions do you have in mind?
Did you grow up as a Republican?
Well, I come by partially, naturally. My grandfather, Martin A. Isley, was a leading Republican in this state from the time he came here in 1871, and went to all the Republican conventions from, I think, around 1880 until 1944. I think the last time. I think he cast the first vote for Wendell Willkie and was elected honorary vice president of the conventions and things of that nature in his senior years. But my grandfather, Will Martin, was a very active Democrat, a very prominent Democrat, and I believe was the state chairman of the Democratic Party. He was appointed United States Attorney for this district by Woodrow Wilson and served in that period, 1914, 15, on there to about 1920. And so I had them, I had both sides. My father was a Republican, and I've been a Republican since I got out of law school and got to the extent that I got identified. And when I got identified in politics, it was on the Republican side. My chief interest coming in as a youngster at that time was in the potential development of the two-party system, which was kind of a latent affair until Mr. Rockefeller came off.
When did you?
Although I became very involved in the Eisenhower election prior to that time. Yes. Gentlemen, may I interrupt this moment? It may
certainly
not take but a few minutes.
Your grandfather was a Republican, your father was a Republican, and you were a Republican. Mm-hmm. Were they all active in the party before Rockefeller?
My grandfather, as I indicated, was very active. And was either a national committeeman or a state chairman on the Republican side, and my grandfather Martin was state chairman of the Democratic Party sometime.
When did you get active?
When I got back from law school, I graduated in 50 and stayed. I got my master's degree at Harvard in 1951, and I recall General Eisenhower was still in NATO, and the Democrats were trying to get him to run, and the Republicans were trying to get him to run, and I became active in the effort to get him to run as a Republican before he announced. And this involved some citizen activity and whatnot over in Hot Springs. That's where I lived at the time. When I first came back, I practiced over there associated with my grandfather's old firm. It was Martin, Wooten & Martin. But by that time it changed. My grandfather was dead, my uncle was dead, and it was Wooten, Land & Matthews. So I got involved in that. I was over there for about a year and a half or so, or a couple of years before I came over here as an assistant United States attorney. So I know it was during the period of time when I was over there, and then during President Eisenhower's campaign, which was what,
56.
So the campaign would be in what, 51 or 52? Anyway, that's when I first got involved. And then I was, incidentally involved thereafter I'm sure, in his second campaign against Adlai Stevenson. Now, let's see now. When did he run against Truman?
He didn't run against Truman.
After he succeeded Truman. And Stevenson was the first.
Ran against Stevenson twice.
That's right, he ran against him twice. That's what. Well, I can remember the election night. I was still in Hot Springs, so I was being aware of that time, whenever that was, in November.
But you were the United States attorney through the
for just three years during Eisenhower's administration. Then I went to private practice for the law firm here.
First administration or second?
First. From up to around the end of 53. I guess it was 2 years. Then I went to private practice with a law firm here until around 59 and went out on my own. And was out on my own in a solo practice until 1970, really, when I became federal judge. August of 1970.
When did you get involved in Rockefeller's campaign?
Well, I met him, and as he got more and more interested in the possibility of the two-party system, started working on the grassroots and the county committees and otherwise trying to make it a viable, active party. I visited with him from time to time, and he knew of my interest in the same direction. But then it was not actually until he asked me to be his campaign manager for his first campaign in 1964 that I became really active again in the Republican Party politics, state politics. And I was his campaign manager in that unsuccessful effort in 64, and then thereafter I was very much involved with him in terms of providing legal advice on a private basis all the way through his successful campaign in 66 and 68, and while he was governor, and even after he was governor, and before I was appointed in 1970.
You were his legal advisor when he was in office?
I was a legal advisor in a private capacity. I didn't take a state position, administrative assistant, or anything in terms of a state position.
Well, you weren't part of the administration as such?
Not in the terms of what you're talking about, but I was very active and very much involved, and on almost a daily basis. I helped him with his legislative program and his administrative program, his attempt to select good people to man and staff the various departments of government, and through all the problems which the government faces. And, so that was really my role, more of a private counselor and with respect to the problems of state government.
How do you assess the impact of his administrations on the state of Arkansas?
Well, I may be biased, but I think it was the most dramatic and important thing to ever occur in Arkansas politics, and it's completely turned the state around. It was like a new breath of fresh air. He brought out into the open and subjected to discussion all the old accepted ideas of politics, of race, of economics, and got the people thinking about them in constructive and different ways. And he could do it when nobody who had been born and raised here locally could have, really. It was very easy for an Arkansan to disagree with him to accept him as a northerner who came in with all those ideas, and to hear him espouse them and to not resent it, and then ultimately come to discuss and to be convinced and change. But I don't believe anybody here, any local person, could have as dramatically confronted the traditions of the state. And you must remember what I'm talking about. We're talking about the six terms of our old fathers that he was following, and Central High and all other things that had occurred after the United States Supreme Court's decision in the Brown case. But he had a dramatic impact on the thinking of the business community and on in terms of what was necessary for the development of the state while he was head of the Arkansas Industrial Development Commission under an appointment by Governor Faulkner in a period of his administration. He doubled the per capita income. I say he. That's a little too strong, but he was responsible for the programs and the directions that and the industrial development and the type of industrial development that had and resulted in this, which was extremely important. He, of course, immediately, and he was fully aware of this, he, more than anyone else, I think, in the South by that time, opened the door to the blacks completely and without condition and accepted them. This was a, and particularly as a Republican, it was he was offering an alternative which we felt was the had the potential of saving the whole Republican Party on a national basis, which would be in effect to really involve the blacks in the Republican Party. And he was alone in that respect. The South, which was at that time developing a Republican Party, in most states, what they were doing were trying to out-conservative the conservative Democrats and say, we're more reactionary than you are reactionary, you know, and that was the vote-getting appeal that they were offering. He, in turn, was turning it all around and saying, no, that's not the way to go, and that I think on the whole he did not prevail during that period, but I haven't taken a good look at the southern states, and you have. I don't know where all the blacks are now in terms of the Republican Party, but I imagine not many of them are in it. There may be exceptions. And, of course, it has a, it's, if you think of the party situation, when he became governor, he, by necessity, had to neglect the party. Parties will always fall into the hands of those who are usually who are willing to do all the hard, tedious daily work. Very few people, usually not of the quality that you want. But and if you're not looking at it, next thing you know, your party is back in the hands of the same type of people that were in control of it before, interested in patronage. Usually working hand in hand with the local Democratic organizations and develop a don't rock the boat attitude. And if a national Republican happens to get elected, fine, we'll get the spoils and work with the local Democratic organization. The assumption being that the Democrats can always be in control, that type of thing. And over a period of time, to a certain extent, and this is also an overstatement, the people with the lack of the imagination got back into control. Not necessarily those who were not very conscientiously, sincerely wanting to develop a two-party system, but who were, you know, thought of it kind of as a closed shop and didn't want to expand it too much.
Isn't that about what's happened, though, Judge? Prior to 1966, there wasn't a Republican Party except maybe a post office kind of a party. Mm-hmm. And then Rockefeller comes in and spends all that time and money and energy for 4 years. Now if you look back at the party again, you've got one representative in the House, one state senator, one congressman.
Yeah, you wonder was it all worthwhile in terms of his great objective.
Now I'm not talking about the state now, I'm talking about in terms of the party, of building a two-party system. Did it tend to revert back to where it was?
It did. And I think, of course, also it is the victim of its own success, of the Rockefeller's own success. He completely changed Arkansas politics. The people he was fighting, the old mossbacks and the reactionaries, they've lost out. And Dale Lumpers came along, and he adopted Rockefeller's programs, and we've had 8 years of ineffective good government. Probably going to have 4 more years of the same. I don't know, but it looks to me like all of it is Rockefeller program. So once the Republican Party was no longer, in effect, the moderate, or in this context, the liberal party offering to attract the liberal as opposed to the traditional Democratic conservative, then it lost its appeal. As soon as you were able to reform the Democratic Party and bring in moderate to liberal leaders who carried on the policies and programs of Winthrop Rockefeller, and then that the Republicans, they had not been the time necessary to establish firmly, and all the way down to the courthouse level, the two-party system. And when you cut that off at the top, then it just started dying at the bottom. And that was coupled with the fact that for the 4 years he was in office, he really, even during that period, even while he was there, he was not able to pay attention to the party. And it's and so then after he got out of office and after his death, it's still struggling, and there are a lot of good people in it. But it almost looks like if you've been preempted, you just you lost because you won. And
isn't that the paradox, that you end up with a rejuvenated and stronger Democratic Party after the reform?
Well, that's been the effect. I think had the Democrats, the old guard, persisted and been a little more successful for a few more years, where the people finally came to the conclusion that well, there's no hope for the Democratic Party to do it, which is there after all. They lived with it, and this was home. And if they had you know, 10, 15 years or something of that nature, then I'm sure that they would not have gone back. They would have found their salvation in the Republican Party. But it was too quickly the Democrats came around to realizing that in effect his views were the views of the future, and they've adopted them and carried them forward. So when you add to significance, it seems perfectly obvious to me that you have Arkansas, a southern state, which has to be considered a moderate liberal tradition of good government, and I just don't know enough about the other states right now to know whether maybe besides Carter, I know they're doing some good things over in South Carolina, but I think the blacks are forcing their way into Democratic politics in great numbers, and they're going to reform the Democratic Party through that route, but they're not going to. It looks to me like at this point that they're not going to the Republican Party to seek their salvation.
Do you think the Republican Party missed a real opportunity in not becoming the progressive party in the South?
Yeah, I think it missed it. They missed the boat in a way on a national basis in not becoming the party that would represent the aspirations of minorities, all minorities, particularly the blacks, and champion those causes which traditionally, under Lincoln and other, you know, have been it's simply been the way of the Republican Party. It lost its way when it became too much dominated by big business and big fiscal interests, and it needs to get back to the people. I don't mean by that the next president's not going to be a Republican, depending upon who the Democrats might choose to nominate. But I don't see necessarily the whole country is necessarily moving to the left or even the middle. It seems to me that there's a strong conservative trend still in this country. And although they may be disenchanted with the next administration, you know, I think it's going to be I don't think the Democrats can just count on 1976. I think Bumper's made a good point there. If they get themselves a veto-proof Congress in November, they may be giving up the presidency in 1976, because then there'll be no question as to the responsibility for the programs. But when I talk about the opportunity, I really think of my attitude. I look upon myself kind of as an Eisenhower Republican, somewhat conservative and middle of the road in terms of economic, but the liberal in terms of human rights. And this, I think, is what the party should stand for, and it would form a great appeal if it could And of course, within our party, there are people, there are, just like within the Democratic Party, there, the whole spectrum is there. And it could change, and it still could change. But I think that was an opportunity in the 60s in which the whole South could have become, in effect, a very important part of the Republican Party on a national basis. The party is doing well in some of the southern states, but until it really turns around in that area, it's not going to be able to compete effectively with the Democrats, certainly not the South.
Well, wasn't Rockefeller's approach in the South atypical of all the other southern states?
I think
because
so.
You start to go back with the Goldwater thing in 64.
Yeah, he was trying all along. He tried to get them, to take a different approach. And trying to think of some of the statistics that really substantiated his point about how the South should go. I know what it was. While he was governor, more blacks called themselves in by polls that we had taken. Identified themselves as Republicans in the state of Arkansas, percentage-wise, than in any other state in the United States. Came out and said, I am a Republican. What happened was, actually, the big tendency was to go, as he cut in, the polls would indicate that those people who called themselves Democrats started shrinking, and more people started calling themselves independents, because it was a big, big step to call yourself a Republican. And then gradually, the ones that we call themselves Republicans expanded, but it never got too far, too big. I think in the heyday, I think there were probably not 15% that were calling themselves or saying, I am a Republican. But considerably more than 50% by this time were saying they were either Republican or independent. See? But then among the blacks, you had this phenomenon of their coming and saying, I am a Republican. While he was here. And I think about that, so that shows that had they opened their arms and said, come, join us, that blacks, and if they'd done it, if it hadn't been just this isolated phenomenon in Arkansas, if it had been a party approach, and particularly a Southern Republican approach, I think it could have had a long-lasting effect. I think they missed one of the boats, and opportunities will come along again, I'm sure.
The Goldwater movement almost made that impossible, South-wide, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because of the people it brought into the party?
It, to a large measure, did. And, of course, that's where he had his very strongest support, among Southern Republicans, except here, really. And we were in the posture of when we were supporting Goldwater. But fighting the attitudes that were prevalent in the Goldwater camp, particularly in the South. It's a very difficult position to be in, and of course with a landslide for Johnson, once again that should have been enough an indication of what should be done from practical political, if not from a morally and ethical reason. But it didn't happen.
It strikes me that there were two major things that grew out of Rockefeller's administration and campaigning. One was that he just turned the light on to ideas, and which allowed issues to emerge that had been submerged for years. So he allowed issues to emerge, to be ventilated, to be discussed, to come to the front. And the second thing was just to have a very much of a modernizing impact on the state. Everything from management techniques to just
to personnel.
Everything he did was wrong politically in terms of the traditions of the state. He came in to a fiscally strapped situation. Mr. Faubus did not run against him. He walked off and left a mess. There had been what we call a windfall tax, double collection of taxes under legislature, so that the legislature, in effect, budgeted those taxes. When the next program came around, the resources were not even there. So he had to come in to a terrible economic situation. He had to ask for taxes, and he championed additional taxes. although they said it was political suicide. He took on this drinking thing in Arkansas. You know. They had the bottle, you know, you take your bottle in the restroom with the brown bag and all, and he fought for the legalization and control of that, and it was passed, you know, and he didn't lose because of it. He brought in professional fiscal people and planners and experts in the state government, many of them out of the state, subsidized their salaries, and that was very controversial. And modernized the structure of the executive branch to the extent that he could under the old 1974 Constitution. And in effect turned over to Mr. Bumpers, who is a fine man, almost an ideal situation, in which he has without the... He's had tremendous surpluses ever since he got in, and the problem has never been how to raise money to fund existing programs, but, you know, what do you do with it? You know, have the legislature come in and decide what to do with the excess, the surpluses that are coming in. And I just spent today's paper, there's a headline, you know,
130.
It's just been a magnificent situation as far as a governor is concerned. He hasn't been forced to deal with difficult financial problems. And has been able, on the other hand, to solve many of the problems of the state because the resources were there. In terms of education, of course, Wynn's great contributions in education. He was, felt was the real hope of the South, you know, was to bring its educational resources systems up to national averages, and fought in every way to do that. As I say, in a situation where the resources were just not there. But I can't, you probably, if you've done any research, you'd have to go back and go through all the dramatic things. He inherited the worst prison system in the United States. And I mean, it was on his desk when he walked in the office. And although from a national point of view, people, that was some of the adverse publicity that came out, tended to reflect on it, it was not justified at all. He completely turned it around from one of the most inhumane systems in the world to, first of all, a humane system, and then fought all the time he's been there for progress and change, and never was satisfied, of course, and there's still room for improvement. Plenty. But he did more to change that around than anybody in the history of the state. And he had, of course, this strong humanity. He was the one, you know, that pardoned all the ones in the death row. That was one of the last things he did before he left the office. Had them pardoned and then commuted their sentences to life imprisonment.
Yet by the time he got to the last year of that second term, I mean, it showed that he was way down on the polls, and the polls showed that he was going to be in trouble against any kind of moderate Democrat. What happened? What brought that about?
Well, this continual, he was always controversial. He did not shun or run from controversy. And 4 years of controversy and change, and the people wanted a breathing spell. It wasn't that they so much were dissatisfied with him. He's really a state hero right now, in my judgment. But they just said, look, God Almighty, we just can't take any more of this right now. Let's just rest where we are. That was an attitude which was prevalent. However, his main motivation, and I was already appointed before his last race, before his last November race, but I was there when he made the decision to run. It was primarily based upon his conviction that Darvell Wallace would be his opponent. And it was just almost happenstance that Dale Bumpers beat Joe Purcell into the second place under Faubus in the runoff by some 1,000 votes or less. And suddenly this new face from Charleston was in the runoff against Faubus, and I'm firmly convinced that he would have beaten Faubus and would have had a third term if that had been the but just as soon as the people had a chance and had to find someone, of course he was a landslide against Faubus. Then wham, into the general election, it was just it was foreordained.
How did he feel about that after all the work he'd done in the IDC and all the work he'd done as governor?
Oh, he was never bitter. You talking about losing?
Yes.
He was never bitter about it. He, uh, I think he recognized as soon as the Bumpers decisively defeated Paulus in that runoff that he was going to fight, and I think he had some of the same attitudes and feelings that Mr. Fulbright had in running against Mr. Paulus, so frustration. I mean, running against Mr. Bumpers, an ability to make him deal with the issues. But the people weren't a bit interested. They wanted peace and quiet, but they still wanted a continuation of the life that Rockefeller had brought to the state. And they looked upon Bumpers, and every time you talk about controversial issues, he was saying, "Me too, I agree with the governor. I think you did a good job on that. I think that's right. I think I'll continue. It would be my purpose to continue the progress that's been made." And he wouldn't say a bad word about Wynn, and never has. He's always admired him. And this is awful hard to be in a political. I don't think he may have to talk to some others to find out whether he ever personally resented it. Certainly he wasn't a bit bitter.
How about the rejection of the Republicans so far as his becoming chairman after that?
State chairman?
Right.
Well, you may know something I don't know. I don't know that he ever wanted to be state chairman.
Who was it? John Ward after the election.
Well, John would know.
He offered himself as candidate for state chairman.
I think you have to go. John would be the one to rely on. He would really know. He was there. My impression, I do recall, was really he saw the thing coming apart that he had spent all this time on, not from just 64, but from earlier. And I think he was hoping that now that he was out of office, that he could get it back online and make this, and I think it was kind of a gesture. John Ward would know. In fact, if you can talk to John, you can get a lot more detailed factual information and data.
You said Rockefeller did what nobody else in this state